and shines like a fire on a hilltop, making money like the bee who does not hurt the flower, end quote. Maybe some people had a little jolt of guilt buying this book, like, isn't this awfully selfish and greedy for me to want to learn ways to create wealth for myself? But when people get excited about the positive, helpful side of wealth, they can start a guilt-free prosperity project. It may be a home business working in the evenings and over the weekend, even while doing their day job. And if they put enough love and foresight into this little hobby business, it will rise up and overcome the day job and become the primary source of income for this lucky person. Fantasy? No. We work with many people who have done this very thing. But the first step is always to clean the mechanism. Many people say when someone is rich, they are filthy rich. And when someone is poor, they are pristine and poor and saintly and clean. And those are just thoughts, and your thoughts can slow you down. If you want to create wealth that flows freely to you, like water from a well, you need to clean those wealth-related thoughts and be able to think of being clean and rich instead of being filthy rich. Remember that most of the dirty thoughts attached to money have been put there by people who are envious. They're actually green with envy. Have you ever seen a sick person turning green? Envy is a sickness. It leads to unhealthy resentments and low levels of energy. So for money to flow to you, money has to become clean energy in your thoughts. Cleaner than oil or nuclear energy. And it's got to be able to move things. Money can move a family from a poor part of town to a nice neighborhood. One clean move. When we hold money to be clean and clear energy, it's much more fun to earn it and expand its presence in our lives. Metaphors move mountains. Filthy rich will make you feel dirty. Why not make a clean sweep? Number 51, get into your mind. Horace Walpole said, quote, life is a comedy for those who think and a tragedy for those who feel, end quote. When Napoleon Hill wrote Think and Grow Rich, his whole point was about learning to direct your mind and thought processes. If you really learned to think, you could become wealthy. His book is still popular today for good reason. His process works. His insights were revolutionary. People can change their fortunes by changing their thinking, no matter how adverse the external conditions seem right now. Every adversity, said Hill, every failure, every heartache, carries with it the seed of an equal or greater benefit. Napoleon Hill was born into poverty in a two-room cabin in the town of Pound in rural Virginia. His mother died when he was 10 years old. That heartache carried the seed of a great benefit, however, when Hill's new stepmother became the most inspiring person in his life. She worked with him daily to build his confidence in himself. She taught him to think. And because of her inspiration, he began writing as a mountain reporter for small-town newspapers at the age of 13. He used his earnings as a reporter to enter law school, but soon had to withdraw for financial reasons. The turning point in his career was in 1908 with his assignment, as part of a series of articles about famous men, to interview industrialist Andrew Carnegie, who at the time was one of the richest men in the world. Carnegie believed that his own success could be duplicated by anyone who used his simple formula. Carnegie commissioned Hill to take that formula to the world. He provided Napoleon Hill with letters of reference to interview over 500 successful men and women, many of them millionaires, in order to prove that all of them were also using this simple formula, whether they knew it or not. Hill was given the job of publishing this formula for success, so he interviewed many of the most important people of the time, including Thomas Edison, Alexander Graham Bell, Henry Ford, and Theodore Roosevelt. The project lasted over 20 years, during which time Hill became an advisor to Carnegie. The formula for success that Hill and Carnegie formulated was published initially in 1928 in his book, The Law of Success. Later, he compressed it into Think and Grow Rich. Hill's and Carnegie's system for success was a process he called autosuggestion, by which he meant the harnessing of the power of thought. Think about something enough, and it can't help but come into your life. It will automatically suggest itself to you once it's found a neural pathway in your brain. Hill said, quote, "Your ability to use the principle of autosuggestion will depend very largely upon your capacity to concentrate upon a given desire until that desire becomes a burning obsession," end quote. Although his books are somewhat dated in their language and social attitudes, the magic formula still applies, and we can learn a lot from him. And so many people forget his most shocking message. Becoming rich is not about being a genius or having a high IQ. His formula can be used just as easily by the average person as it can by a genius. Autosuggestion works because it's the opposite of taking all your suggestions from the outside world. Once you give up doing what everyone else suggests that you do, your life will take off. You will be ready to think and grow rich. Becoming wealthy is a logical thinking process that can get messed up by emotional input. The logical road to wealth always gets you there when followed. We only get sidetracked when our negative anxieties pull us astray. Fear is the most dangerous emotion on the way to wealth because it robs you of so much energy. Maintaining a fear requires enormous ongoing mental energy. It's like juggling. Ever try to juggle bowling pins? That's the job of the average worried mind. Fear is high maintenance. And even when that fearful energy gets converted to resentment and anger, it's still all that energy wasted. It's energy that could instead be used to create wealth. Plans for serving others could be created with all that energy being funneled into resentment. We've heard employees at a small restaurant complain that they've had a bad day at work because for some reason they were slammed all afternoon. What do you mean by slammed? People just slammed us, wouldn't stop coming. We thought we'd catch a break in the afternoon, but we didn't. Notice that these workers were actually working against wealth. There was a serious emotional disconnect between those employees and the owners of the restaurant, a disconnect that the owners are responsible for, a disconnect caused by the owners' fear of sharing the wealth, and therefore the mission, with their employees. In larger companies, fear undermines wealth also. For example, most employees subconsciously work against getting promoted. They fear and resent their employers, and therefore do not go the extra mile in their work and advance. Their energy goes into the fear instead of the work. If they were able to take all negative emotion out of their work and just gently and joyfully work on, they would win advancement. But emotion creeps in and undermines wealth. Every client we coach confronts the primary issue. Do you want your life's energy to go into fear or into wealth? When Jonathan Swift said, "A wise man should have money in his head, not in his heart," he was on to something. Money is a mind game. We lose when we make it an emotional heart game. As you create more wealth, do not forget to honor yourself by cultivating your mind and releasing your emotions. A lot of us emerge from childhood and adolescence with really low self-images. Perhaps well-meaning parents have told us, "You're never going to measure up. You don't even know how to clean your room. You didn't give your schoolwork much of an effort. You're probably not going to make much of yourself." And so you come out of childhood quite often thinking, "Well, I better get some kind of minimal job that makes some basic minimal money, given how unsuited I am to measure up to big success." And that interior, fear-based approach doesn't serve you. Everyone has something that they're really, really good at, and if they could just get it into alignment with the right profession and service of others, they would make a lot of money. And a lot of money can mean different things to different people, which is good. Sometimes it starts small and just blossoms. We know a person right now who became a millionaire by taking care of other people's kids, then running preschools. And it didn't sound like a glamorous thing to begin with, just watching other people's kids, but it was what she was great at and what she loved. That's the power of the human mind at work. Number 52. Convert your dreams. Nathaniel Brandon said, quote, "A goal without an action plan is a daydream," end quote. Put your dreams away after you've glanced at them at the start of the day. And by that, we don't mean just give up. We mean don't get hypnotized by the dream. A lot of people only dream. They never take a step to make the dream real. So do something to make that dream you had a reality. Don't just let it exist as a dream. Southwest Airlines' Herb Kelleher said, "We have a strategic plan. It's called doing things." Most people we coach think their best dreams can't be acted upon yet. They're missing too many pieces. They might want to start a new career or a new business, but they have to wait until they have the capital, or wait until they're in the right situation. But there's never a perfect time for anything bold. There's no perfect time to start a business, and no perfect time to take chances. There's a choice of potential bad times, so choose one of them and just go. Start converting that thing that's just a dream into reality, even if it's nothing other than the first step of registering the business name, registering a domain name, deciding to do something to actually bring it forward. Read a book about it. Open a file. Set a time each day to be with the dream for a half hour. Call it execution time. Take tiny steps to execute the dream. Once your dream becomes a project rather than just a hoped-for thing in the future, you start to experience a quickening because energy flows to execution. It doesn't flow to daydreams. Daydreams are narcotic. Energy flows to action. Once you're in action, you're getting the wishing and hoping out of your system. Now you're out of the dream category and into the execution category. And the project lives differently in your mind. It's an active project. So, when someone brings up something related to the dream, you can say, "I'm working on a project in that area right now. Let's talk." Instead of, "I've always dreamed of doing something like that." Michael Korda, in his book Ulysses Grant, emphasizes that Grant was Lincoln's greatest general because he had a bias for action. He writes, quote, "This adolescent incident of getting from point A to point B is notable not only because it underlines Grant's fearless horsemanship and his determination, but also it is the first known example of a very important peculiarity of his character. Grant had an extreme, almost phobic dislike of turning back and retracing his steps. If he set out for somewhere, he would get there somehow, whatever the difficulties that lay in his way. This idiosyncrasy would turn out to be one of the factors that made him such a formidable general. Grant would always, always press on. Turning back was not an option for him. End quote. People come up to us and say, "Wow, I'd love to write a book. How do you write a book?" Guess what? We'll give you a little secret. You sit down, and you get the secret device. It's called a pen. And you start writing it. A what? A pen? Where do I get one of those? People would rather dream. Have your book, or your website, or your new profession be a project, not a dream, and then give it your attention. Sometimes the extra 5 minutes you give to your project after you've decided to quit on it kicks you into a strange new gear, a powerful new zone. This doesn't happen all the time, and when it doesn't, you've lost nothing. Just quit after those 5 minutes. But it happens enough to really surprise you that you had so much more to give, and you had energy left you didn't know you had. You thought you were too tired to go on, but that was just a thought. You don't have to believe your thought. A thought is just a thought. And this reminds us of William James when he said, quote, "Most people never run far enough on their first wind to find out that they've got a second. Give your dreams all you've got, and you'll be amazed at the energy that comes out of you." End quote. Taking action on a dream is something Sam learned in college. He was sitting in the cafeteria late at night. It was after 11 o'clock, and he was studying. Suddenly, someone came in and said, "Hey, there's this group that sells books door to door, and you can win a prize to Mexico if you sell a certain number of books. Dino, the kid that won it this year, he can't go. And he's going to sell his ticket, which is airfare and accommodations for a week, and you get to go down with 30 other college students to Mexico. He's going to sell his ticket for $200. Sam looked out the window at the ice storm gathering in chilly Canada and said, "Wow, I'm going," because Mexico was a long-standing dream of his. And his friends sitting around him in the cafeteria said, "But you can't do that." "Why not? I've got $200 in the bank. I can do that for sure." "But you know it's leaving tomorrow. You can't just get up and go." "Why not?" "You just can't. You just can't do that." They were all studying for the same test. They had an exam the next day, and the catch was, it was 11 at night, and the bus was leaving to drive down to Seattle from Vancouver, and then they would catch the flight to Mexico. The bus was leaving at 4 in the morning. Sam simply said, "I'm just going to go for it. Look, you know, I will have a chance to fail exams many times in my college career, but I will only have a chance to go to Mexico for $200 once. I'm going to do it." So he went for it. He had a great time and still looks at pictures from that trip today. And when he went back to school after he returned, the instructor of the class said, "I noticed you weren't there for the exam." And Sam had already accepted that he had failed and would have to somehow make up for that. So he said to the professor, "Yeah, I had to leave the country on some personal business." The professor said, "You had to leave the country on personal business?" "Yes, I was out of the country." "Well, you can take the exam then. I have an alternative copy of it. The questions are different, but the material it covers is the same." Sam took the exam and passed it. Fortune favors the bold. So take your dream out of dream status and take some action on it today, not tomorrow. Number 53. Tap into cause and effect. Ralph Waldo Emerson said, quote, "Shallow men believe in luck. Strong men believe in cause and effect." End quote. We find the biggest thing that holds people back from creating any wealth in their life is their unwillingness to see that they can actually cause things to happen. They don't tap into the law of cause and effect. They're expecting something to happen to them. "When this situation happens to me," they say, but they don't see that they can be the cause of something good. So they're always waiting, hoping to get caught up in something successful or to be in the right place at the right time. They think, if I can just catch the wave, it'll carry me to the shore. We tell clients who have big vision paralysis to start by doing 2 things a week. That's it. Because 2 things a week that you proactively do will move your vision from the future into the present. 2 things a week is 100 things a year. If you do 100 conscious activities in a year, it's a guarantee that you will cause something to happen. Lack of activity, lack of attention, lack of investing thought into that subject causes it to stay out there. You can be the cause that activates the law of cause and effect. Several days after the Indianapolis Colts beat the Chicago Bears in the 2007 Super Bowl, a rumor surfaced regarding a post-game congratulatory meeting between the winning quarterback, Peyton Manning, and Rex Grossman, quarterback for the Bears. Rex Grossman asked Peyton how he was able to so effectively grasp and throw the football in the variable, sometimes torrential rain conditions of that Sunday evening. Rex Grossman himself had fumbled twice and threw interceptions at the game's critical junctures, attributing those results to the inclement conditions. Peyton Manning had incurred a right-hand thumb injury in the AFC Championship game that potentially would have been disastrous for his big game. Add that to the rain, and it was amazing that he was not affected. Peyton responded to Rex that he practiced wet snaps from center during the previous week, and went on to say that because the ball was wet, he needed to lighten his grip to throw in the rain, which countered the tendency to grip the ball hard in such a game. This rumored conversation was reported on ESPN Radio's Dan Patrick Show. Tony Dungy, the Colts' winning coach, was a guest that day, and Dan could not resist asking if the rumor was true. Did the Colts really practice wet snaps? Tony assured the audience that any time during the season when an outdoor game might present wet conditions, Peyton Manning had 10 footballs soaked in water and practiced handling snaps and passing for hours. See the contrast here between a person who chooses to cause success and someone who is at the effect of life. Rex Grossman was at the mercy of the weather. He went into the game hoping the bad weather wouldn't affect him too much, but alas, bad luck, it did. But Peyton Manning tapped into the power of cause. How can I cause a good result to happen? How can I cause effective ball handling in the rain? Well, I'll just soak down some footballs and cause myself to be totally comfortable with that. I'll have those wet footballs snapped to me for hours so that my hands are used to them. I'll cause wet to feel normal. Rather than hoping the weather will be okay, I'll cause it to be okay. Hope is not a strategy. If you want something like your prosperity to be different than it looks like, ask yourself a useful question. How can I cause that to happen? Number 54. Sell before you build. Ludwig Born said, quote, "Losing an illusion makes you wiser than finding a truth," end quote. There is an illusion that people who open small businesses are prone to believing, and it says, build it and they will come. This is what we call the field of dreams myth. Many small business owners put all their work into getting their doors open, getting their business physically and legally ready for business, and then hoping for the best. If you have done this too, you have left out the most important part of success, the unique, compelling, and cool appeal of your business to customers. What have you created that sets you apart? What are you offering that has your customers say, wow, cool, when they hear about you? What's the urban legend about your business? What's the buzz? Once you've gotten yourself excited, and we mean truly excited about your business, you're ready to do business. Customers and prospective customers can't get excited if you're not. It's not enough to just open the doors and wait. You need to add value to your offer. And you need to keep doing this. Keep reinventing over and over. Start your business over every Monday by asking, during your creative thinking time, the most important time that you'll ever spend, what can I change or add to my product or service that will make it even more attractive and compelling and irresistible? Most new business owners think in linear logical order. I'll get my customers after I open. But we're asking you to think backwards. Do some reverse engineering. Start with the outcome you want and work backwards into the present moment so you can get your customers before you open. Some health clubs have achieved mastery at this. Prior to their facility getting ready, they will have a kiosk or desk in the mall open for months, registering people into new memberships. They know it's not true that all they have to do is build it and they will come. Another thing you can do to pre-sell the universe on your success is to personally go around to neighboring businesses and introduce yourself before your business is open. Make the first move. Show them what kind of a person you are, caring for their businesses as much as you do for your own. Start forming alliances early. Don't make them learn about you and just wonder about you, watching your new place get signs in the window, not knowing who you are. Get yourself out there so you can start telling your story early. Sell before you build. Your whole goal is to sow the seeds of caring and quality ahead of time, even before you open. Introduce yourself to the community so you won't have to offer some kind of cut-rate, introductory prices. 9 out of 10 people don't buy on price, even when they say they do. They buy because you can solve their problems for them faster and in a more comfortable way than the competition. So remember, sell first. Open second. Think pre-market, pre-sell, pre-mail, and pre-enroll people into being excited about your business when it opens. Do as much as you can ahead of time. Sam opened a small business in a small town where he pre-marketed and pre-publicized so dramatically that when the business was finally opened, it was a big community event. The mayor was there to cut a ribbon. Mayors, being politicians, actually enjoy this kind of thing, and it gets you some nice coverage in the local papers. Remember the psychology of the customer in all of this. Customers make their buying decision long before any money changes hands. When you are buying your new car, your decision is made long before you sit down for the paperwork. Once you can picture yourself in that car, the sale is basically over. So, give the world some pictures to live into before you open. Number 55. Invest your mental energy. Robert Collier said, quote, a single idea, the sudden flash of a thought, may be worth $1 million. End quote. When it comes down to wealth, the best thing you have to invest is your mental energy. And if your mental energy is distracted and put into worthless, toxic things like arguing with reality or judging what's wrong in your life, you are making a bad investment. When you're lying in bed about to go to sleep at night, are you thinking about your problems and bills you have to pay? Or are you thinking about potential opportunities? When you're driving your car, or just sitting around somewhere with nothing else to do, or waiting in line at the bank, what are you thinking about? Are you thinking in terms of opportunity, or are you thinking in terms of problems? It's time now to really be careful in how your energy is channeled, and watch out for other people to make sure that no one takes your mental energy in the wrong direction. If you have a business now and have an employee that's a real problem, put the energy into figuring out how to replace him with a great person, not how to, quote, deal with his problem every day. Good people are the greatest asset that you have. Nobel Prize-winning scientist Linus Pauling said, quote, "The best way to have a good idea is to have lots of ideas," end quote. But you can't have lots of ideas if you're not disciplined enough to focus on what you want. That's all discipline is anyway, remembering what you want. Begin to realize how very precious your mental energy and your attention are. That's why you use the phrase pay attention, because you're paying and investing your attentive energy into some subject. Your attention is your wealth. So be aware of where it's being invested. Keep doing your gut checks throughout the day. Is this where I want my mental energy to go right now? Will it create wealth? Is it a high return subject? Am I selling to high probability buyers or low? If I put enough mental energy into this subject, will wealth return as a result? If the answer is no, then I want to just move along. Move your mental energy into an area that will return something. We're not saying to obsess 24 hours a day, but as long as you're at work, why not do this? The problem often is daily loss of focus, massive leaking of mental energy. We think of 1,000 different things. Anything we focus on long enough comes into our life. When we think of one thing, that one thing will be drawn to us. So it is essential that we maintain our focus on what we want. Number 56. Buy some happiness now. Marcus Aeneas Seneca said, quote, "But it is a pretty thing to see what money will do," end quote. We've been told forever that money can't buy happiness. Is that true? Maybe money can buy happiness. Not necessarily for ourselves, but for other people. You can donate money to good causes, and by doing that, you will actually make a difference in someone else's happiness level. If you build a well in Africa, you can increase the happiness level of the people in the village. If you help a family raise money for medical treatment, you watch what money can do for happiness. Someone telling you that money can't buy happiness is usually trying to put a heavy spin on their bitterness about money. When they say it can't buy happiness, you might say, well, actually it can buy happiness for a lot of people. And that's why I feel great making it. The Beatles sing that money can't buy me love, but it can buy an expression of love for others. Former Phoenix Suns basketball player Kevin Johnson has put together a program in the schools where he grew up so that the kids aren't just on the streets all the time. Now they've got compelling school programs that they just love doing. And the kids are loving it, and they feel the love from the teachers. So Kevin Johnson's money is buying some love. Wealth can buy you an expression of love going outward. It just can't buy you the receipt of love coming in. But who needs that anyway? We've already got that inside. We were born with that. Number 57. Find out that no one is coming. Peter Drucker said, quote, "The best way to predict the future is to create it," end quote. Daniel Pink has written a wonderful book about how many people are now in business for themselves called Free Agent Nation. Pink says, quote, "We used to have a system in this country where companies offered employees security and employees offered companies loyalty. That bargain has come undone. Anybody who still believes it is a fool," end quote. One of the great breakthroughs in my life was the work I did with psychotherapist and author Nathaniel Brandon and his wife, the life coach, Devers Brandon. Dr. Brandon had an ongoing saying and theme he taught his clients to understand. The saying was this: no one is coming. How powerful for you if you could just get that concept clearly in your mind and heart. No one is coming. No one is coming to live your life for you. No one is coming to solve your personal problems for you. No one is coming to attract your wealth for you. No matter what you do, life is going to be about what you can do with your life and the wealth that you create. We're not saying don't use coaches and advisors and helpers. Just be aware that when they succeed by connecting you to the best parts of yourself, by showing you what's inside you. It's back to you. No one is coming to live your life for you. And no company can do that for you either. No spouse can do it, although people keep changing spouses, hoping it will happen if they can just get the right one. A lot of people are disappointed inside of companies because they keep thinking that Microsoft or IBM or Nokia or somebody is going to be the final answer for me. They're going to provide that missing piece, which is my life direction. It's almost an attempt for people to get childhood reinstated again and find a new form of parent. And you can't blame people for wanting that, because they were conditioned throughout childhood to think their parents would take care of them and they're looking after them and so don't worry about anything. And then boom, at 18, it's like, whoops, just kidding, it's all up to you. A lot of people feel shocked and betrayed by that and resent it and resist it. Then they go back out looking for new parents, subconsciously, and that's why they're so bitter about their company experience, why they hate their superiors. You get that Dilbert anti-company effect because it just wasn't something they had hoped for. A second childhood. Someone's coming. But it's not bad news that no one is coming. It's good news. Because the ultimate source of wealth is in you. You'll do more to find your wealth by sitting alone in a room all day with just you and a blank pad of paper than you will with 100 interactions with the world outside you. It's in you. You will end up creating your own wealth in life, and you can do it, and it's not even that hard. Dr. Brandon, who you can find at www.nathanielbrandon.com, tells the story of leading a group therapy session when someone spoke out and said, "Dr. Brandon, you say that no one is coming, but that's not true. You came. You came into our lives and showed us how to live with higher and higher self-esteem, and our lives got better and better. So don't say no one is coming because you came." "It's true," said Dr. Brandon. "I did come. but I came to tell you that no one is coming. Number 58. Now make money important. Malcolm Forbes said, quote, "Money isn't everything as long as you have enough," end quote. In the entertaining David Mamet movie, The Heist, Danny DeVito's character famously says, quote, "Everybody needs money. That's why they call it money," end quote. But people also always say money isn't everything. And it's always people who don't have enough of it who say that. It's not people with lots of money saying that money isn't everything. When it comes to the physical realm that we're in, unfortunately, in one sense, money is everything, because every choice that you make in your physical nature is determined by how much money you have, where you're going to live, how often you get to see your kids, how much you get to see your wife, the experiences that you have with your family, and to a large degree, how healthy you are. Studies have shown that people who have higher income and have more money can actually live longer just because they have access to better medical care, to better ways of living and eating. In his lively book, No BS Wealth Attraction for Entrepreneurs, our friend and sometime mentor Dan Kennedy quotes millionaire rock star Gene Simmons from the band Kiss, who gives his advice about how to live a successful life. "Be clear," said Simmons, "be truthful. Stand there proudly, unapologetically, unabashedly, and say, 'I love cash. It will get me everything I want in life.'" How long you live is impacted by your money. So don't cop out and dismiss money by saying money isn't everything. And that's the paradox. Because as we also said earlier, you'll make money faster when it's less important to you. So the trick is to get it on both levels, important and not important. Important enough to pay attention and focus and be mindful, not important enough to stress out over. The real problem with the money isn't everything philosophy is that people use it as a ticket to go unconscious. They start to stress over money, then they get scared and declare that it means nothing. To deal with the money stress, they fog themselves over with food, alcohol, illicit relationships, television, gambling, and family disagreements. All of those ridiculous addictions are designed to generate fog and loss of consciousness. The thinking is this: if I can get everyone to agree that money isn't everything and it's only money, then I can go unconscious about my own creation of wealth in life, and it's my ticket out of the game, and I don't have to feel responsible for the fact that I'm not a player. But you do want to play the game. Because the great and gentle game of wealth is a fun game to play. And like any other fun game, it has to be played with a high degree of consciousness and recognition. It's time to recognize that money in the physical realm is good to have. Because when you see that wealth determines what clothing you wear, what car you drive, what food you eat, and the retreats you go on, then you're more excited in a good way, and you can bring more of yourself to the game of creating wealth for your life. Many people never allow themselves the joy of succeeding at what they do. They get so tangled up in fears, complaints, and resentments that they don't see how clear a shot they have at being extremely successful. Don't let this happen to you. Realize this. You can serve and help many more people if you are successful than if you are not. It's not ego or greed driving successful people. It's a pure love of life itself. Allow yourself that pleasure. The great and successful novelist, W. Somerset Maugham, had it right when he said, quote, The common idea that success spoils people by making them vain, egotistic, and self-complacent is erroneous. On the contrary, it makes them, for the most part, humble, tolerant, and kind. Failure makes people bitter and cruel. End quote. Number 59. Set the valve to in. Jose Silva said, quote, "As long as you keep yourself centered and are fulfilling the purpose you were sent here for, you will succeed and be prosperous in all areas of life." End quote. There is a natural flow to money. There's a psychological version of this flow that we all have. And if we make the determination that money flows in, and that's the primary movement of the flow, it will actually happen that way. But it has to be conscious intention. Some people talk about their own psychological cash flow by saying, "I never seem to hold on to money," or, "How is it that I'm always broke? It just keeps flying out faster than it's flying in." In most Chinese restaurants and Chinese stores, you can find a little ceramic cat that's holding up one paw. Next time you go into a Chinese restaurant, you'll see that ceramic cat. Almost all of them have it. It will usually be right next to the cash register. It's the good fortune cat, and it means money comes in. Wealth cats, also famously known as beckoning cats, are now enjoying wonderful popularity with all shop owners around the world. This colorful symbol of wealth originated in Japan. Soon, China took notice and made the wealth cats their own because of their psychological potency. They actually alter the flow of money. Money comes in, and seeing the cat helps the mind tune itself to in. But that's silly, isn't it? Maybe not. Have you seen what's happening with China lately? Their whole nation's cash flow valve is set for in. Basically, the cat is just a little symbol, but it's a powerful psychological trigger for money comes in. You can create just such a trigger in you. You can always be thinking of cash flowing in. Cash comes into my life. It doesn't just go out of my life. We become what we think about. When you use the affirmation, "cash flows in," for a while, it becomes more than an affirmation. It's soon living deeper in your mind as an operating principle. It has made its neural pathway there inside the spongy receptive brain. If you work on it and let it permeate into your decision-making, it can guide you. When you have a determination to set the valve to in rather than to out, it can help you make decisions. Do you want to buy this new vehicle right now? In the back of your mind you hear, well, that would be having the valve on out if I did that. Therefore, the answer is no for the moment. So something that started as an affirmation ends up as an operating principle inside your system, and that's where it really gets powerful. Neutral situations start to show up as more opportunities for cash flowing in because your mind has been programmed now to see them. Number 60. Succeed by failing. Lao Tzu said, quote, "Failure is the foundation of success and the means by which it is achieved," end quote. Most people want to succeed by succeeding, which makes sense. But when failure happens, it can be the best teacher ever. We realize that we're free to experiment more. And as Dale Doughton says in his classic little business book, The Max Strategy, experiments never fail. Sam had 5 straight business failures before he turned it all around. These 100 ways in this book represent the exact changes he made to execute the turnaround and become a millionaire. They not only worked for him, but they have worked for his hundreds of clients who have transformed failure into success. But he later found that all the failures he had were also helping the successes happen in retrospect. By paying close attention to their lessons, they were paying off. Some people just look at failure as failure, but failure can actually help you develop skills. The great quarterback Fran Tarkenton wrote a book called What Losing Taught Me About Winning. That book described how he had drawn from his losses on the football field to help him succeed as a business person after his sports career was over. Sam says, some people ask, how do you overcome the fear of business failure? I just say, fail a couple of times and you won't be afraid of it. Failure is just information. It tells you what's working and what's not working. Your success is sped up by information on what it is in life that doesn't work, because the more of that you can learn, the sooner you're getting to what does work. We got an email from Matt Fury. You can get his emails too, and we recommend them at www.mattfury.com. In this email, he said, this evening I sat in the sauna with my son Frank, talking about what it takes to get good at anything. He's only 6, but he's primed and ready for knowledge on how to build a powerful self-image. Could you tell me about something you didn't used to be able to do? I asked. Something that used to be hard for you, but now it's easy. Throwing a football, he immediately said. Okay, what else? Catching a football. And? Punching and kicking. Okay, great. Can you think of anything else? I guess writing. Any idea of how many things you've forgotten? How about learning to roll over, to crawl, to stand, to walk, to run, to get dressed, to feed yourself, and so on? Frank's eyes went wide with wonder. All of these things were once very difficult for you. You struggled with them. You made a ton of mistakes. Yet now you can do them a lot easier, right? Right. Do you know what this means? Matt asked. It means that anything you want to learn, the same rules will apply. At first, you'll make mistakes, you'll struggle, then you'll make fewer mistakes because the mistakes are teaching you what to do. Then, if you pay attention like you have so far, you'll be able to do the new thing too. It's as simple as that. But if you whine and complain and cry about your mistakes, you'll never get anywhere. You'll think poorly about yourself, and you'll get results that don't make you happy. Matt said, quote, I talked with Frank for 15 minutes about the value mistakes have in life, and I'll be reinforcing this talk over and over again. Of course, this is only a lesson for 6-year-old kids. I don't know of a single adult who could benefit from this knowledge. Ha! All of us can. Don't fear mistakes. Use them as the corrective feedback they truly are. Mistakes lead to greatness, but only if you stop judging them as bad. End quote. You can certainly succeed right off, and that's great when you do, but you'll still always have little failures after that. It's important to learn to make friends with those. You may have personal failures, partnering failures, some product failures, or some expansion you tried that failed, learn from them. Make failure available to you as a teacher. Failure is the greatest teacher there is. You don't seek it. You don't want it. You're operating as if you're trying not to have it, but once it arrives, welcome it. Number 61. Find someone with a problem. Andrew Carnegie said, quote, the more difficult a problem becomes, the more interesting it is. End quote. Money is like a chess game, in which the object of the game is to take certain pieces off the board and clear a path to completion. And those pieces are best thought of as other people's problems. Do you want the surest route to creating wealth? Find someone with a problem and solve that problem. Maybe their problem is that there's old furniture in the yard that's too big to fit in their car to be taken away. Take it away and let them pay you. You have solved their problem. A client of ours recently paid us a large fee to help them solve her problem of poor sales figures for her business. We were able to apply principles we know about transforming sales failure, and her problem was solved. We were coaching a business consultant named Charles, who wanted help with marketing himself. I need to market my consulting business better. I need some brochures and a better presence on the internet, and maybe a promotional DVD and a system for cold calling. Can you help? Charles said. Sure. But why do you want all that marketing material? So I can market. Why do you think you need to market? Doesn't everybody? To get new clients. And exactly why do you want new clients? To grow my business. To what end? To make money. I don't see what you're driving at here. What if you could get that money from existing clients and people they refer? Then you could eliminate all those other costly steps that usually don't work anyway. Charles was like most people who always think they need new business and new clients and new money. They can't see that the fastest way to build wealth is through existing relationships that have already been created. They try to reinvent the wheel and start all over by chasing after strangers all day. They think it's smart marketing to do that. They can't see that it's weak marketing because the activity isn't solving anyone's problem. We asked Charles, how many past and current clients do you have? About 15, I would say, said Charles, who hadn't been consulting for long. The fastest way to wealth is through those 15 people. Call them and listen. Visit them. Allow them to